broadcasting from the UNMC College of Nursing. Get ready for RN Huddle, the podcast dedicated to bringing hot topics for and by nurses to the table.
Welcome to the NPIAP podcast. This is Joyce Black. I'll be your host today for the podcast. And if you've been following me, you know that I always start the podcast with what's in my mailbox. So here's what's in my mailbox. We have a number of patients who have gotten pressure injuries from some of the medical devices we have. We can't seem to find better products than what we have. What do we do? Well, the answers are kind of complicated. You can ask the people that run your medical supplies, the people that purchase them, to see if there's anything else on the market that may be better. You can talk to the company that makes the product and see if they are in development of a new product and see if you could be the one to trial that new product. Maybe there's a softer plastic, for example. We know that the NG tube is the stiffest medical plastic that's used. You didn't say in your note what the product was that was causing the problem, but if it happens to be the NG tube, why don't you write to the company you buy them from and ask if they're working on a better design? So you've got a combined problem. You've got a product that may be the culprit, but you've also got a process. So you got to look at your process. Are you relieving the pressure? Are you examining the skin? Are you patting the skin? And so this question just leads itself perfectly into my next guest. I want to introduce to you Bridget Vola. Bridget Vola is coming to talk to us today about pressure injuries in patients on ECMO. So obviously these are patients in critical care. And I have to tell you that in all the years that I've worked, I have considered patients on ECMO to develop unavoidable pressure injury because they are so incredibly ill that the horse is out of the barn, if you will. I know she's going to convince me otherwise. So let me have Bridget introduce herself to you, and then we'll get started. Bridget, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Bridget Vola. I work at UAB Hospital in Birmingham, Alabama, approximately 1,200 bed level one trauma center. And we have 11 adult ICUs. So we are big and we are busy.
Well, Bridget, you joined me today with the idea of really the ECMO is probably one of the largest and most complicated medical devices that are put into people but yet have an external part of them. You know, I had a nurse a long time ago when I was talking about medical device pressure injuries tell me that the mitral valve that was inside the patient, how could that be a pressure injury? And I said, well, I'm not talking about the mitral valve that's internal. I'm talking about the things that are external. But you have the combination of the two. You have a device inside the body that's also outside of the body, creating some pretty nasty wounds that I have seen. Why did you focus your work on the ECMO patient? And I probably should ask you to define it for the listeners that don't work in ICU and don't have, you know, a fund of knowledge about ECMO. So please let's stop and do that first.
Okay, so ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, and it's a mouthful, so that's why everyone says ECMO. There's basically two versions of ECMO, and there's what they call VV or veno-venous, and then there's VA or veno-arterial. And basically, it's heart-lung bypass. So if you know you take these patients to surgery and you put them on this bypass machine so that they can do surgery on their heart, and then traditionally you take them off of it and you recover them and they go about their day. This is a way to keep them on essentially this bypass in order to either let the lungs heal, the heart heal, or both things heal. We saw a lot of it during COVID.
It is a very complicated system, and it requires very sophisticated nursing care, respiratory therapy care, cardiovascular care. In fact, we had and still probably have one-to-one cardiopulmonary technicians with patients on ECMO. So this is not a simple device. And as far as I knew, you have to help me out, these patients weren't up walking around. They were sick. And so how did you decide to look at these patients for the prevention of pressure injuries? Because what I said in the beginning, I thought this was an unavoidable story. We couldn't move these patients. And yet you're going to tell me that you prevented pressure injuries in them. So, okay, here's your chance. Convince me.
Okay. Well, I am lucky enough that my facility saw the benefit of expanding our team, and that plays a role into what I'm about to tell you. So back in 2016, we expanded our wound care program to one WOC nurse for approximately every 100 beds. So we have approximately 1,200 beds. We now have 12 full-time WOC nurses during the week. And then we actually also have three on the weekend. So it's super nice. That plays a huge role in being able to tell you my story, because before this, I was not part of the wound care team before this. I was part of that expansion, but the wound nurses, they had nearly 1,200 beds. So they were just running around seeing wounds, you know, teaching nurses at the time, hey, turn these patients and put a wedge under them. And then they were going to the next fire. They just did not have the time to spend on the units. And with the expansion to one WOC to every 100 beds, it gave us an opportunity to reduce our people that we had to get in touch with, our beds. And so it gave us an opportunity to really spend time with the nurses, spend time educating, spend time in real time, but also to be able to participate in quality improvement projects like this. So during COVID, we saw an increase in ECMO use. And as a result, we started watching our pressure injuries go up and up and up and up. And I happened to cover five of the CV cardiovascular cardiothoracic units. And so the two units that ECMO ends up on are my units. So we kept saying, okay, we got all these pressure injuries and what can we do about it? We had a quality person for our mechanical circulatory department. And she has to track a whole lot of data for the ECMO program. They are governed by the Extracorporeal Life Support Organization, or ELSO. So she has to report, we have to report that data to them. And she was tracking our pressure ulcers as well and saw the same thing I did. And she really was sort of the one to say, how do we get a team together and how do we improve this? And so we jumped on it and said, okay, here we go. And so that's sort of how we got started.
So you took a look at a very complicated patient group, the patients on ECMO and probably other forms of external cardiac support, and said, we aren't satisfied with this high rate of pressure injuries, the ones I would call unavoidable. You weren't satisfied with and said, no, we're not satisfied with this. We're going to tackle this problem. You took the most complicated medical device related pressure injury and dug into it. What'd you do?
Yeah, so we decided to do that because if we can prevent them in there, then we should be able to prevent them in patients who are less sick. So we first decided that the vast majority of our ECMO patients are cannulated in the right IJ, right neck. And we do that so that they do have more mobility. We want to be able to get them up, get them walking. So we cannulate them whenever possible in the neck so that we can. If you've never seen ECMO before, it is a garden hose, essentially, and it circulates their entire blood volume. So obviously very critical that it does not move or get displaced. So they were taking the ECMO cannula, a garden hose, putting it against their ear and co-banding it to their head so that it wouldn't move, which is extremely effective for not having it move. However, it was staying on there for hours, and when they would take it off, they had pressure injuries on their ear. That seemed like the easiest place to start. It seemed like low-hanging fruit and seemed like something that we should be able to tackle fairly easily. So we decided to focus on medical device related first. Those seemed like just the easiest ones to tackle. It was 100% not one thing. It was not just addressing. It was not just turn the patient. It was, we created a team involving 18 disciplines, and we started meeting originally twice a month, but we backed it off to a month. But we included PTOT, we included pharmacy, dietitians, respiratory therapy, the nurse practitioners, the unit managers, CVOR, the perfusionist and ECMO specialist, bedside RNs, WOC nurses, the surgeons. We had everybody who was involved in the care of the ECMO patient was at the table or on the Zoom at the time to talk about what can we do. And it, we started, our low-hanging fruit was, we took a Mepilex, which we already carried in the hospital, and we started wrapping it around the cannula before they put it against their ear. Simple as that. The concern at first was that they can't have anything sticky, any residue on their cannulas because of infection risk. But the nice thing about Mepilex is the silicone adhesive does not come off. So it was not leaving a sticky residue behind. So the ECMO specialist, the perfusionist were fine with that. So that was where we started. That was the very first change we made. But then we looked at a million other things, from automatic consults to dietitians to make sure they were getting the nutrition that what they needed and the extra supplements like Juven and things, as well as these patients spent a lot of times off the floor. So they were missing a lot of their tube feedings, a lot of their nutrition. So they changed the entire protocol for ECMO patients to be a volume-based protocol instead of a time-based protocol. They added PT, extra PT and OT to work with these patients on the weekends instead of just Monday through Friday. We had pharmacy involved because they helped us create a completely new sedation protocol so that we can get these patients up and moving. They walk the halls. Obviously not all of them, because some of them are super, super sick and can't, but the ones that we can, we try to get their sedation light enough, early enough, so that they're not getting debilitated. They can get up and walk the halls, which is a twofold thing, because not only does it prevent pressure injuries, but it also is beneficial if they're being listed for heart or lung transplant. Wound care obviously involved doing a lot of extra education with the bedside nurses. Just everybody, the physicians were on board from the get-go. Hey, what do you need us to do? How can we do it? And I think one of the biggest parts, the biggest keys in all of this, is we included scripted dialogue in our interdisciplinary rounds. So the nurses were already rounding with the physicians and the APPs and everybody at the bedside, but we added little blurbs that the nurses and the PT and the physicians, everybody was specifically had something to report specifically related to pressure injuries or mobility. And that just got everybody thinking about it every single day when they were rounding. And so that really helped a lot.
So tell me how you got the patient turned over to put the Mepilex on the sacrum.
So the policy at this hospital is that everybody gets a Mepilex pretty much when you walk through the door. It's kind of like, welcome to UAB, drop your pants, here's a Mepilex. So almost everybody gets one, unless they're, if they're not at a risk. So we use the Braden score. So, you know, if they're 18 or above, they're not at risk. They're not going to get a pressure injury, or they're less likely to get a pressure injury. So they may not get the Mepilex, but pretty much everybody else in the hospital is going to get them. So they are already just kind of hardwired to be looking for it, making sure that it's at the top of the crack, not at the back. You know, like we have all these silly sayings just to get everybody to get it on there and get it in the right place.
So you had a standard practice for the prevention of sacral pressure injury. And then based on what you just told me, you turned the care of the ECMO patient on its head. You flipped the whole process over and changed everything from the care of the cannula in the neck to nutrition of the patient to the point that they're ambulating.
Yes.
Would I be safe to say that if I needed ECMO, I better be at the University of Alabama? Is that what I need to say?
I would want
to be looking for Bridget Olin to take care of me. Wow. Wow. Bridget, I think you've shared some pretty radical thinking, and I want to thank you for sharing that. What's the outcome of this? Are you shaking the walls of nearby hospitals and universities with this work?
We are. We're really excited about it. We started looking at our data in January of 2020. Our pre-data was January 2020 to June 2020. So that was our 6 months of pre-data. From June of 2020 through the end of quarter four in 2023, we significantly reduced our pressure injuries, and we have now been to zero pressure injuries in the ECMO population for three or four quarters, and we eliminated medical device related pretty early on, and those have been holding steady for a couple of years, but we've managed to then start tackling the other ones. And so we have reduced our pressure injuries to zero.
Well, let me tell you, for those of you that are listening, if you heard the beginning of my story, I said I have always been of the belief that pressure injuries in patients on ECMO are perhaps the final frontier, the unavoidable pressure injury, because they're so hemodynamically unstable that they can't be moved. And the cannulas, once placed, can't be tinkered with because of the risk of exsanguination. This lady, Bridget Vola from the University of Alabama, has shown me to be wrong, and I welcome her for that. Thank you, Bridget, for your insight. Are you planning to do any further work on this, or are you marching out and onward? I take it you're taking this study elsewhere and telling the story, yes?
Oh, we're trying to get the information out as much as possible. We've shared it at the ELSO conference. We shared it at WCN. We've done some posters. I got to talk a little bit about it at NTI. We're trying to get the information out. We are looking at publishing our results. We still track this data. We're also kind of adding to that. So we've kind of tackled the pressure injuries. Obviously, we have to stay on top of it and stay on the education. But we're also now looking at moisture-associated skin damage, because that then puts the patient at higher risk of developing pressure injuries. So we're tracking that as well as vascular injuries in this patient population. But we're trying to now expand a lot of what we've learned to other ICUs, to the acute care floors, and you know, we've been very successful in reducing our pressure injuries housewide. We're not quite to zero everywhere yet, but we're steadily making that march. So
I'd say the world is your oyster, Bridget Vola. Thank you for spending some time with us today. This is Joyce Black with the NPIAP podcast system. I want to thank Courtney Smith for being my podcast guru behind the scenes to make this all work. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to RN Huddle. To stay connected, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UNMCCNE. Or check out unmc.edu/CNE for more program information.